It is All-Ireland hurling final weekend. It's here. Get ready for throw-in. Today on News Talk Daily, we are talking county rivalries, the mad hunt for tickets, Croke Park, the power of the GAA, hurling, of course, and because, you know, I think you probably guessed from my accent where I'm from, we're talking about football, a wee bit of football. I'm Ciara Doherty, and I really am delighted to be joined here today in studio by the editor of thejournal.ie, Sinead O'Carroll. Sinead also co-hosts the 42FM, but for the purposes of our podcast today, Sinead, we're referring to you as a camogie veteran.
No.
You're good with that?
Yeah, I've just eventually kind of relaxed into retirement.
From the game. And yeah. You should see the sadness that's just washed across Sinead's face. Paul Rouse is here too. Paul is a professor in the School of History at UCD. I would hazard a guess that there is nothing you don't know about the history of sport in this country.
I don't know, there's loads, but I'm
You know a lot.
You can test me.
Okay, the big test is coming up. I'm pretty sure you know more than me, Paul. I'm just going to be clear from the outset here. I am a GAA fanatic as of the last 4 weeks. I am a bandwagoner, and I am just going to admit to that good and early. But let's look. It is the Friday of an All-Ireland hurling weekend. Sinead, the clash on Sunday in the senior hurling final between Tipperary and Cork. Exciting, unique pairing for an All-Ireland final.
The GAA is often thought of as an organisation that's quite traditional and doesn't change much, but actually it embraces change all the time. There are just constant changes which keeps it alive and keeps it as this exciting entity and organism in Ireland. This is a sign of how those changes really work. So the back door came in 1997, but this is the first time we've had this pairing in an All-Ireland final. It's quite incredible because we talk about how Munster hurling is the crown jewel, you know, it's the strongest teams, but like two of the most traditional counties, the two of the strongest counties in hurling, and they're meeting now in an All-Ireland final. It's really exciting as a neutral in some ways, and then in other ways you're like, no, I don't really care if Cork or Tipperary win another All-Ireland.
Just to double check, is your husband from Cork?
My husband's from Cork and my dad's from Tipperary.
Okay, so that you cut out of the marriage and the will by that comment. If you had to pick a side, so dad had this, over husband.
I had this last year physically. I was on the couch and my mother, who's from Clare, was on my left-hand side, and my husband, who's from Cork, was on my right-hand side. And after about 20 minutes, I had to turn to the husband and say, sorry. So it's always the mammy.
Sorry, Larkin.
And it's always Shane O'Donnell as well, to be fair.
These are two hurling mad counties. And this, as I understand it, is the sixth All-Munster All-Ireland final. How does that regional pride and the regional rivalry play into the narrative here, Paul?
Oh, it's hugely important. And I would say, straight away, I'm with Sinead on this as well. From someone who's from a county which is outside the axis of evil of Cork, Tipperary and Kilkenny, the idea that one of them is guaranteed to win an All-Ireland just is difficult to contemplate at the weekend. But it's a fair question. Like, why are they the traditional counties? Why is it that the Munster Championship in particular is so strong? And it comes back to history. So you can go back to the early medieval period to this unbelievable corpus of literature, which dates from the 8th, 9th century, where there's records of people hitting the stick with a ball. You go to the National Museum in Castlebar, and there's an incredible exhibition put together by a woman called Clodagh Doyle, where hare hurling balls, which were saved from the bogs as far north as the north of Sligo and as far south as right down into South Cork, and they carbon dated to 1190 AD. So the 12th century, every century between then and now, there's a carbon dated hurling ball. There's the oldest hurlers from a bog in Offaly in the early 17th century, which we're very proud of. So that physical remnants in there. It's also there in bardic poetry from the medieval period onwards. It's there in the Breton laws, where if you got injured, I mean, those who played against Sinead, who got injured playing against Sinead.
I am a cornerback there.
Quite the reputation.
Never recovered.
Anybody who got injured, there was forms of redress. And on it goes then into travel writers and newspapers in the early modern period, the 1600s and the 1700s. In this, it showed the game being played in rural areas and in big houses in Anglo-Irish culture all across the country. People playing with a stick and ball. And there's no wonder in this, because this is all around the world. You cannot go to any culture for which we have a significant record through civilization in which there is no record of people playing a ball with a stick.
So a lot of us will think of hurling and think of the GAA's 1884. That's almost, you know, when it started. You're saying 700 years before that, we were playing a version of this game?
One of the greatest books written in Ireland is a book called Scéal na Hamána by a man called Briarthóir Caisnia, who wrote it in Irish. It's about 900 pages of, recently translated, but it's 900 and something pages of the most dense Irish, beautifully written you've ever read in your life. But the strapline under Scéal na Hamána, the story of hurling, is O Hussach Ama Go Míle Uke Dochtal Cahar. That is from the beginning of time until 1884. He didn't bother getting even to the GAA. He just wrote about this idea that this game is something that extends through history and into myth.
And yet, it is not as widely played in this country now as Gaelic football. Why is that?
My view on that is that it's a global phenomenon as well. Stick and ball games are less successful than ordinary ball games. That's just a global fact, number one. Number two, it's much harder to spread a stick and ball game. It's more expensive. There's more skills involved than just a football game. And number three, it is a question of dedication. How dedicated are you? I think now there are more people playing hurling than have ever played the game. And it's to do with Go games and the spread of underage games around the country. And it's spread and really has a presence in clubs. Like, look at what's happening in Kildare at the moment.
Kildare did the double in the Tier 2 competition. So for Kildare to win a Joe McDonagh, it was seismic. Like, I'm from Kildare. So the idea that we would be going from a period of, you know, third tier and fourth tier hurling to getting to the second tier and actually winning it and having Lee McCarthy matches next year.
What brought about that growth?
So Paul might know more of the history, but like our anecdotal history in North Kildare in particular is there was a huge amount of migration of people from hurling counties to North Kildare in particular. So in my club in Selbridge, where there's a really strong hurling tradition, it was because, like I mentioned, my dad's from Tipperary, my mother's from Clare, great hurling counties.
The Blowins brought it.
Yeah, and as Gerlach Nan says, you kind of have to be playing hurling. I think he says 7 or 8. Otherwise, it's bust. I'm not sure if that's totally true. You can play it for enjoyment. You're definitely not going to be making a senior county team if you're not playing by the age of 9. But you can definitely play for enjoyment. But, you know, hurls were put into our hands young enough that, you know, we were playing at a decent level and we were getting the love of it. The love of it is the big thing, because stick and ball games are difficult. And, you know, the hand-eye coordination to catch a small ball and get it on a stick and actually like, the, you know, taking on the physicality with it as well. That's all something that has to be kind of learnt early or innate in you. I was turning 40 this year and my mom said to me, are you going to play this year? And I said, oh, I don't know. She said, why don't you play until you're 40? I was like, mom, I'm 40 this year. And she's like, yeah, but you're not 40 yet. There's always another line that you have to cross. But I was really missing hitting a ball. I just found, like, after work or after like a long day, it's just such a release. So I've ended up joining a tennis club just to see if like that hitting the ball can continue like longer into my 40s, 50s, 60s.
You will end up back on a field.
It won't be the same.
Last weekend, I trained a minor team with a friend of mine up here, and they were short a couple of players for a particular training session we're doing, the two of us. I'm 55. He's 5 years younger than me. He'd probably kill me for saying that, but he's at least 5 years younger than me. And we ended up in the field in the thick of it. And there is no feeling like it.
Yeah.
Just to be on grass with a ball.
But the last time we had a first time winner of the Liam McCarthy was 1981.
It was awfully in 81. I was there.
Yeah.
It was an incredible thing. And people could not believe it.
Yeah. There's something just quite boring about the same people winning it all the time.
So I think this is slightly different though. I think this is really interesting this weekend. I can't wait for the game, because Cork haven't won for 20 years, which is extraordinary that a county as big as Cork, with more clubs than any other county, more clubs than various counties put together, a storied lore of the game, before they were surpassed by Kilkenny in the number of titles, utterly dominant. 20 years for Cork without winning an All-Ireland is unbelievable. And I can't wait to see their forwards because I play against Tip. And Tip have come from nowhere.
Cork are the favourites, aren't they, for this weekend? I often wonder going into games, are you better being the favourite or the underdog?
There's a lot of pressure on Cork. There's some of their players, like there's three or four of them who this is their fourth All-Ireland. Yeah. You know, a lot of them will be wearing Horgan's like quest on their shoulders. It's not just about him. It's like, you know, it's similar to Joe Canning in Galway. Like he can't be the best hurler not to have an All-Ireland. I think Cork people alone could fill Crow Park twice if there was enough tickets to go around. The atmosphere in Cork is unbelievable right now. Tip have experience of All-Ireland as well, but they also have experience of winning them, which is a different type of experience. There'll be a lot of, I think, emotion to try and get Noel McGrath another All-Ireland. And I think with Tipperary, they never really go in as underdogs.
See, I don't think it matters.
Yeah.
It's an All-Ireland final. What anybody else thinks who's going to win is should be irrelevant to you, and it must be irrelevant to you. Your only job is to get onto the field between the four light lines and do it. That's it, nothing else.
There are those who follow JA and follow both who would say hurling is a superior game.
Anybody
going to comment on that?
I don't have a problem with that one. There are people who think that hurling is like kind of like the sporting equivalent of Beethoven's Eighth Symphony or the game of chess, and that there's no such thing as a bad hurling match. And that's like my father's view that there's no such thing as a bad pint of Guinness. And I do to some point take that point. I think everybody who loves football will acknowledge that an amazing hurling match is like nothing else on this world. And there's nothing wrong with acknowledging that. The problem is the hurling snob is a very difficult beast to manage because they seem to think that football is both unskillful and inherently useless. And that's where I depart from
yeah,
from
okay. I find it hard to compare sports because once there's a story and once there's a narrative that you want to follow, you can kind of get into anything. Like, am I always going to choose the hurling final over whatever else is on? Yes. Will I take a ticket if anyone has one up for grabs? Absolutely.
Okay. I am quite annoyed here that you've got in with your shameless call out for tickets before I got in with my shameless beg for tickets for Sunday
week. But then if you get to watch David Clifford in Crow Park, like conducting the orchestra and like scoring 1-9, like that's a thing of beauty as well. So,
and just one of the things for anybody who is listening today who isn't that interested in GAA or hurling or the football, it is worth pointing out that Paul Mescal is doing the commentary for BBC Amateur Right on Sunday.
I struggle to see why that has any relevance to the conversation, Ciara.
Off those GAA shorts, that's all I'm going to say. Okay, let's move away from hurling for a second and let's look at Gaelic football. If hurling is the ancient game, then football is the more modern invention. What's the story behind it, Paul?
So people have played football just as they played hit a ball with a stick all across the world for millennia. All across rural Ireland and urban Ireland, people kick the football with their foot. And we know this back through hundreds of years. We've known it's very similar to what was played in England, in Florence, in France, La Soule that was played in France. You go anywhere you want, people kick the ball with their foot. Ancient China, you can see the tapestries that survive and everything. The GAA was founded in 1884. Gaelic football did not exist. There was a game called football. But what happened was, at that point, soccer and rugby had already pushed into Ireland. These were games that are identified with the British Empire. Maurice Davin, who founded the GAA with Michael Cusick, hated rugby. He thought it was a demoralising plague and that it should be it was too rough. And he wanted to construct an alternative game. Davin sat down and wrote rules for this new game, which they invented and which they called Gaelic football, and which they put out in opposition to soccer and to rugby and took on the contest.
And the GAA has always really leaned into symbolism and national pride and spectacle, hasn't it?
It's a construction which is of its time. So all across the world at the end of the 19th century, modern sporting organisations were being founded. The sporting organisations that were present in Ireland almost invariably owed their allegiance to the British Crown. The flags flown was the Union Jack. The martial music that was played was the bands of the British Empire. The patron of those organisations was the Lord Lieutenant. But the very moment that this happened was there was a national cultural awakening. The founding of Éintacht na Gaeilge of 1881, the founding of the Land League of 1879, basically trying to take the land of Ireland off the 7,000 landowning families who had it and redistributed. Charles Stuart Parnell looking to bring home rule. I think so you get a ferment of cultural nationalist ideas. And Michael Cusick read this cheap, popular edition. Books change lives, right? So Michael Cusack read a popular history of Cú Chulainn, in which Cú Chulainn was famed for his heroism, as all men are, in playing sport, in hitting a hurling ball and everything to do with this. He was changed from a man who played cricket, who had founded a rugby club, and he left, walked away from that world, having read this book, and he founded, with Maurice Davin, the Gaelic Athletic Association, whose full title is the Gaelic Athletic Association for the Preservation and the Cultivation of the National Pastimes. Mm-hmm. Now, we know the Gaelic football is a bit of an invention. We know hurling was dripped with Irishness, but it's in the political context which also gave it its identity.
And I was at the game on Sunday, the Donegal Meath game in Croke Park. And the atmosphere at the beginning of that match, I swear it was gladiatorial. It was just electric in that stadium. And you really got the sense for people who were there, this is about my place.
Oh, people in place.
My people, my county. And the athletes who are out there are not doing it for money. They are doing it for a love of the thing that means the most to me, my home, my place. I'll never forget it. Now, it wasn't that atmosphere, I'll be honest, at the very end of the match. But for the first few minutes when those two teams came out in the pitch, it was wild.
What is this? It's place. There is no transfer system. You play for where you're from. And that has to mean something.
Mm.
I played because I love football. I love the ball.
But I never transferred to a club in Dublin, and I've lived here for 20 odd years.
So am I over romanticising this, or do you agree? Because I'm conscious maybe I am.
Hand in hand, and I think that this is where there's some contradictions within how much you love the GAA. So like, you kind of sometimes love it and sometimes hate it. It can be a responsibility or an obligation on some people. And particularly if you're a good player, I wasn't. So I didn't. Those obligations weren't as high on me. I've had philosophical debates with my sister about whether it's better to love something and not be good at it, or love something and be really good at it, because your obligations and responsibilities change. But the responsibilities are to place and to your club first. And like, there is a lot of brand talk around like the club and it's the most important thing. I never fully believe that. I think people say that if they have a Sam Maguire or Lee McCarthy in their hands at some point in their life.
There are two books that people should read which talk exactly about that. It's Kieran Murphy's book and Emma Ryan's book. And you put the two of them beside each other and read the two of them, you'll understand just how much the complexities of playing as against identity, and why you play, and how hard it is to stop playing.
Yeah,
let's talk about All-Ireland weekend and what it is that makes it so special. There's the mad dash for tickets. Once again, Sinead and I are looking for tickets. Just want to put that out there. The walk to Croke Park, the wearing the jersey, the colours, the parades, the anthems. There's a ritual to it, isn't there? There's a bit of a pilgrimage.
Yeah, and I think this is why there's been so much conversation about the split season, because part of the tradition and part of the pilgrimage was that it was the Sunday in September and you weren't competing against other sports. You know, you got the full attention of the country, you got the full attention of the county, and all the pageantry kind of from the club that you were brought up in. And you can see it on the roads from Cork. You'll see signs, you'll see flags all the way up from Cork and Tipperary for both teams this weekend. So it is weird that it's in July, but I don't know, people are probably starting to get used to it. We might push it back another week, we might push it back another 2 weeks, but it feels like that fever pitch again. Like I mentioned, if you're in Cork, there is bunting, flags, hats being sold in every town. Like midweek in Mallow, there was stands, it was three separate stands selling Cork stuff to go to the match or to put up on your house. Like, that kind of fever pitch is incredible. So yeah, I'm all for people getting on the bandwagon and kind of seeing the GAA at its best.
Yeah, as long as those who are there on the wet afternoons in Ballybuffet or Mallow get their tickets first. I will say that. Let's look to the actual important game, which is Sunday week's game, the All-Ireland Football Final. Paul, how long am I into this podcast? And I don't think I've said Donegal once, never mind 20 times. I read this great article in the Irish Independent on Monday. Eamon Sweeney had written it about the Donegal-Kerry clash. And he said, I don't want to reduce this to a clash between McGuinness's brilliance and Clifford's brilliance. But that's exactly what this is. Would you agree with that assessment?
No, I wouldn't. I think to reduce it to that is to deny everything else that will happen. I think I would elevate it by saying that that's a huge part of the thing to look forward to. There's too many other good players on the pitch, and it's to deny the fact that Kerry's manager, Jack O'Connor, has won a lot of championships, and their coach, Keane O'Neill, has transformed that team as well. But, however, if you want to talk about them, I think Clifford, with the exception of Offaly's Matt Connor, is the greatest footballer ever that I have seen. I think he's awesome. I think Jim McGuinness is a manager who, if Donegal managed to win next Sunday, I think he enters a whole different stratosphere in terms of achievement. You can say, oh, he's only won two All-Irelands and other people have won four, five, six. It's the context in which he has won them. If you look at the history of Donegal GAA, after the GAA was founded, no county board. Clubs founded in Donegal played their football in Derry. County boards finally founded in 1905. It doesn't last. It finally founded again in 1919 and it finally takes. But Donegal did not win an Ulster Senior Football Championship until 1972, at which point Cavan already had 35, right? So Donegal had won none. So they win three in the 70s. McGuinness comes on in 92, is on the panel that wins the All-Ireland in 92 and wins, I think, the fifth Ulster Championship that Donegal had won. Donegal go back into the wilderness. He comes back and takes over control into 2011. Obviously, they won the All-Ireland in 2012, got to a final in 2014, really unlucky. But they've won seven Ulster Championships in a game which he, first of all, transformed. I didn't like the transformation in the game.
This is when they played extremely defensively.
Now, he'll say the counter-attack was huge and all of that, but it spawned a million imitators who were worse at doing it and didn't add the attacking thing in it. So he revolutionised Gaelic football and changed it into a different sport, really, and was hugely successful doing it. And now he's back in a whole different coaching sphere.
And a whole different style. So he's not just a one-man band.
Changed the game and then the GAA had to reinvent the game because it had lost.
One of the best at it. It's a phenomenal story.
What I think, though, about David Clifford, if you want to do that framing of McGuinness versus Clifford, what Clifford has done is brought joy back to the game.
Oh, yeah.
How many years have we been talking about pain? Like, I have heard football journalists talk about the pain of having to go and watch football. That is not where you want your sport to be, and especially when there's hurling snobs around to keep you down. So what Clifford has done, and even before the change of rules, and the rules have just, you know, put it to a different stratosphere, is very like Jack McCaffrey. He expresses himself. I often hear people say that about being on stage or being on a pitch, and it doesn't really make sense. But when you watch David Clifford, it makes total sense. He's able to express himself and he's joyful doing it. And that's what you need. You need people who are comfortable in their superstardom.
Yeah.
And he is so comfortable in how good he is, but he doesn't do it in a way that puts people off. Like, so many neutrals are up for Kerry because of David Clifford. Like, neutrals up for Kerry, it's unheard of. Sorry, Ciara.
And do you know what? I think that's where I'm going to end the podcast. I think I've had enough of this greatest of all time player. Thank you very much. Okay, but I'm going to ask you, and I'm going to put you in the spot. Call the hurling on Sunday.
Cork.
Okay, Cork will win the hurling and I think Kerry will win the football.
Okay, well, that's us finished. That's for sure. Paul Rouse and Sinead O'Carroll, thank you so much for being here on News Talk Daily. And just to say, if you want to hear more from these two, and I have a feeling you just might, they're going to be appearing at the Galway International Arts Festival tomorrow afternoon for a public talk entitled Double-Edged Sword. What exactly are you going to be talking about, Sinead?
The population and depopulation of GAA clubs around the country. Yeah.
And it's work. What is the future of the GAA, or does it have a future?
I will probably talk a lot about integration.
Do go on giaf.ie. Well, that's it for the week here on News Talk Daily. Thank you so much for your company. You can catch up on all of our episodes on the Go Loud Player or wherever you get your podcasts from me, Ciara Doherty. Do enjoy this spectacular All-Ireland week.